You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Dan Withard.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, September 5th, 2017.
2016, we had 465 cases. Mm-hmm. This year, so far, and we're not done with the year yet, we've already...
Court-appointed special advocates volunteer to monitor the legal situations of wards of the state. In today's community report, WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaks with CASA volunteer Lester Wadzinski about his experience as an advocate in Monroe County.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Courtney Stewart and Stacy Govanette talk about the upcoming Bloomington Alzheimer's Walk on Everyday People, a weekly segment aimed at improving the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in Monroe County. But first, these local headlines.
The site of the now-demolished ABB manufacturing plant on Bloomington's west side is being considered as a location for a cardboard recycling plant. Bloomington Economic Development Corporation President Lynn Coyne told the Monroe County Redevelopment Commission on August 30th that an anonymous corporation approached the Indiana Economic Development Commission with the idea.
And in this particular case, this prospect, which is a paper recycling facility, is looking at three sites. Mm-hmm. One of those is the ABB site here in Monroe County. And they propose a project to invest $350 million. Mm-hmm. It would generate 100 jobs, payable just under $30 an hour, very good jobs. It's also a very good activity.
Coyne says the plant would recycle used cardboard into material that can be used for containers. However, the cardboard recycling facility could generate between 800,000 to over 1 million gallons of what is termed high-strength waste per day. Bloomington Utilities Director Vic Kelson explained this high-strength waste, or high BOD waste, will have to be pre-treated before it can enter the city's sewer system.
BOD is biochemical oxygen demand. It is what happens when you have organic materials like sugars or starches or certain other chemicals that are in wastewater. If that water then gets discharged to a stream, The organisms in the stream consume these organic materials and deplete the oxygen in the stream, which kills fish and other organisms in the stream. So,
Kelson says the city's Dillman Road wastewater plant has the hydraulic capacity to handle the proposed facility's wastewater flow, but does not have the biological treatment capacity needed.
This would be high strength BOD waste. The idea here is to build a facility close by the manufacturing plant that would consume most of that BOD and basically render the wastewater from the plant at approximately the same strength as municipal sewage. And then that could be discharged to our sewer.
Building an industrial waste pretreatment plant could cost the county between $14 and $18 million, according to the preliminary cost estimates provided by consultants Black and Veatch. County Attorney Jeff Cockrell says even the lowest cost projection may be beyond the county's bonding capability. Cockrell and commission members say having industrial waste pretreatment facility on Bloomington's west side could bring in other industries that produce high-strength waste. Kelson gave as an example breweries, distilleries, dairies, and some biomedical facilities. Because steam is involved in the recycling process, a steam-generating plant would also have to be built on the property. The facility could also influence the county's plans to extend profile and gate parkways and could put an extra 150 trucks on area roads. The Economic Development Commission President Lynn Coyne says he's consulting with Public Works Director Lisa Ridge on the issue.
We did discuss with Ms. Ridge the roadway construction. The road could be shifted There are a variety of things. There's going to be a need for a road because of the truck shipments, but there might also be a north-south opportunity as well.
The proposed recycling facility is being dubbed Project Picnic to protect the investing company's identity and plans from its competitors. Coyne says the facility will bring 100 new jobs with an average wage of $29 to $30 per hour.
And these jobs are technical. They're process-controlled electrical maintenance. I forgive me for not being so into that, but these are technical skilled jobs that keep this thing operating, operate the control systems, mm-hmm. how all that works. So they require a level of skill that justifies the pay.
Referring to the county's master plan for the area, Commission Member Richard Martin indicated that he found 100 new jobs to be on the low side.
I would like to see the county planning review this in the context of mm-hmm. the comprehensive plan for this area, because right. there is in the comprehensive plan this designated as an employment site. The employment opportunity was looked at considerably more than 100 employees.
County Attorney Jeff Cockrell emphasized the commission's August 30th discussion was, quote, very preliminary, unquote, and he is still researching the proposed project. Monroe County is one of three sites being considered for the cardboard recycling center. Cockrell says the company is expected to make its site selection this fall.
After being cited for multiple tax code violations, Eagle Point Golf Resort is now prohibited from doing business. The golf course and attached resort on Bloomington's far south side is being forced to stop financial transactions due to an alleged failure to pay sales and employee payroll taxes, according to Monroe County Sheriff Brad Swain. By law, the state of Indiana cannot close a business, but it is allowed to keep a business from being able to make a sale. That means that although Eagle Point Golf Resort itself is closed, current members are still allowed to use the golf course. On August 30th, Sheriff Brad Swain responded to a comment via Facebook on the Herald Times comment section. Quote, delinquent tax collection is a primary duty for Indiana sheriffs. Some are lax on that aspect of the office. I choose to keep compliant business on a level playing field with their competitors who are operating on an unfair profit margin by keeping taxes that were collected and never sent in, unquote. Swain stated that it wasn't uncommon for a closure to happen, but as a last resort, and many times the payment schedule is made in the 11th hour prior to closure. He said a sheriff also may exercise the option for to seize assets and auction them to recover the delinquency. The tax code violation comes from the alleged violation of an agreement to make payment plans on sales taxes and employee payroll taxes. Eagle Point Golf Resort owner Doug Thomas also allegedly fired two of his employees under the pretense of sharing resort information.
The Indiana Department of Transportation announced new lane restrictions for area highways earlier this week. Interstate 69 Section 5 construction is expected to restrict traffic between Bloomington and Martinsville from Chambers Pike to Legendary Road starting from today and lasting until December 1st. On Bloomington's south side, West Fullerton Pike is now open, but southbound lanes on Highway 37 will be restricted to just one lane from Rockport Road to that road beginning tomorrow. And the Monroe County Hospital and Monroe Medical Park can now be accessed from Leonard Springs Road and the Fullerton Pike interchange from southbound Highway 37. I-69 Section 5 updates are available on the Indiana Department of Transportation's website. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Dan Withard. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
The Monroe County Court-appointed Special Advocates, or CASAs, are volunteers who monitor and testify on behalf of children who are wards of the state. Over the past 5 years, the number of children in need of an advocate in Monroe County's CASA program has quadrupled. WFHB Director Wes Martin sat down with CASA volunteer Lester Wodzinski to discuss CASA's work.
Okay. My name is Les Wodzinski, and I am a volunteer with Monroe County CASA.
And what does CASA stand for?
Well, it's a CASA, Court-Appointed Special Advocate. And our mission is to, I guess, to put it quite simply, make sure no children slip through the crack. These are kids that are in the judicial system for reasons of neglect or abuse. They aren't lawbreakers or anything like that, but these are our kids that have been found by the court to be what they call a child in need of services, or more commonly called the ward of the state. So basically, these are kids that are in a home where something's not right, either due to abuse or neglect, and the parents just aren't taking care of the kids. And so therefore, the state has to step in. Now, having said that, the Department of Child Services are really the kind of the main go-to people for these sort of things, but they have a huge workload. Most of the case managers that I work with probably have double the amount of cases that they're supposed to have. And so that's where it's helpful to have CASA involved, because as a volunteer, I'm just have one case. Might have several kids in the same family, but so I'm able to devote more time into making sure everything is fine, that the kids' rights are represented, that, the home is checked out, that, basically they don't slip through the crack.
What kind of rights are we talking about when we're talking about the child's rights?
Okay, well, you know, it's kind of interesting because the parents will generally have an attorney, oftentimes a public defender, and the Department of Child Services has their attorney, but, you know, the kids actually don't have an attorney. And so we go to court, and, there's periodic hearings and so on, and we're asked to present our findings to the judge and so on. And, the rights are that the child in need of services is in a place where they're safe, and that there's some future plan going on as to either reunification with the family if the parents can get their act together, or an adoption process. And so we're there to make sure that all that happens.
And my understanding is that you have had, well, CASA in general has had a large increase in the number of children that they've served. I think Mayor Hamilton mentioned this maybe a month ago during an address at the public library. CASA has had something like four times as many children going through their program and in need of services over the past 5 years.
That is correct. And I brought some figures along with me. And in 2016, we had 465 cases. This year so far, and we're not done with the year yet, we've already had 615. So we're 150 more than what we had for the entire year last year. Right now we have about 120 volunteers, but we have 100 kids on the wait list that aren't being serviced this way with a CASA. And so we need 50 more volunteers. And there is training coming up in October.
And what does volunteering for, as a court-appointed special advocate, what does that look like?
Well, we do a lot of investigative work. If the parent, say, for example, is on probation, okay, we will check with the probation officer and make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to do. If the parent has been ordered to attend counseling or drug rehabilitation, something like that, we check on it, make sure it's actually happening. You know, we go to that agency and say, hey, is this person showing up? Are they doing what they're supposed to do? What are their what progress are they making, and so on. So we check all that out. We go to wherever the child is placed. It could be in a foster home. It could be with grandparents. Or sometimes a child is actually placed in that home if it's not considered to be dangerous, and we feel that, you know, the parents are making some progress but still need monitoring. And so we will make monthly home visits to make sure the kids are fed, they're clothed, they're going to school, that the residence is acceptable, you know, clean and that sort of thing. And so we do that sort of investigative work. And then every few months there's a hearing to update the court as to what's going on. And so we have to submit a pretty extensive report on what we've found out. So if we've been to the school, talked to the teachers, we talked to the social workers, as I said, you know, probation officers, whatever, all that is documented that, yeah, you know, we've looked into this and here's what's going on.
It sounds like there's a lot of work outside of just creating a relationship and fostering a relationship with the child itself. There's a lot of work into looking into the family dynamics in general and whether or not people are doing what it is that they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, and it's really not a big brother, big sister program. You know, we are there more to advocate for the child in the legal system. And we don't consider that our role to become, you know, a friend, I guess, in a way to where we're taking them to, you know, baseball games and stuff like that. In fact, we're supposed to try to, you know, maintain an objective viewpoint of things and not get too connected. And if the child needs that sort of thing, obviously, you know, we're going to be aware of that and can recommend that, connect them if they need to be. But, yeah, there's just a lot of that going on. I mean, you do get to know these folks pretty well just by seeing them. I've had cases go on for 2 years, so I've seen them once a month for 2 years straight and sometimes more often, and I get to know them pretty well.
And how long have you been doing this, Mr. Robinson?
I've been doing this in my sixth year, and I'm on my fifth case.
And is there any advice you would give to somebody who's thinking about volunteering with CASA?
You know, just make sure you really want to do it. It's hard. I mean, there's no doubt. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. It is a difficult thing. And it, you know, if dealing with this kind of nasty stuff is not for you, then you probably shouldn't do it, because it does take a lot of dedication. On the other side of the coin, though, however, is the staff at CASA is really good, and they're very supportive. The training is excellent. And then also, I would say that the Department of Child Services, their case managers, they ought to get the Mother Teresa Award. You know, I mean, these folks are overworked, and, you know, that's where we can step in to kind of help them out as well. And so we work very closely with them, and, you know, hopefully we save some kids, you know, or at least get them in a good spot so they can get on with their life.
When you're talking about some nasty stuff is the way that you phrased it, but during one of these court proceedings or when litigation is ongoing, what are some of the things that you've seen, or what's something that a volunteer with CASA should be kind of prepared to deal with, either emotionally or legally?
On the emotional side, there could be, you know, evidence of physical abuse, sexual abuse, you know, or just mental abuse, that sort of thing. Now, a lot of times you're not there to witness it, or most of the time you're not, because people behave when the CASA comes around, but you find out about it or you know, whatever, there's investigations and so on. And so, you know, I guess mentally you just have to kind of look at it kind of clinically and not get too wrapped up in it. Try to just do what's right. You know, for example, you know, we've seen tapes of kids that have been interviewed at Susie's Place, you know, for sexual abuse. But you gotta just try to deal with it, you know, and move forward.
Mr. Wodzinski, thank you so much again for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Okay, well, thank you for the opportunity to talk about CASA.
WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaking with CASA volunteer Lester Wodzinski. The full interview is available on our website at wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service. Now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Coming up next, WFHB's weekly community resources segment, Everyday People.
Hi, Stacy. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Courtney?
I'm great. Stacy and I are here. We're going to talk a little bit about the upcoming Alzheimer's Walk here in Bloomington on September 24th. And this is a local effort to raise funds for people suffering from Alzheimer's.
It's at Bryan Park, the Woodlawn Shelter.
Okay.
Actually, the last time I was there, it was on the other side, so they've moved it.
To the Woodlawn Shelter side, all right.
And registration is at noon. It's on September 24th. That's right. A Sunday. So you go, you register by noon. I believe if you bring donations of $100 each person, you get a free T-shirt. And the opening ceremony is at 1:15. It's very touching. I know that was always one of my favorite parts. I don't know if they do this every year, but they have in the past. They would have these flowers that would spin. You put them in your garden or in a pot, and different groups of people, caregivers, would hold up a flower. And people with Alzheimer's would hold up the flower. And it was really, it's a powerful moment, and they have different speakers. And it is a great program, and we just wanted to highlight that a little bit. If you're interested in doing the walk, the representative for our area, his name is Kyle, and the phone number is 317-587-2238. And super nice guy. I met with him, and he believes in what he's doing, so I think it's going to be a good event. They've been growing by leaps and bounds the last few years.
It looks like you can go online to alz.org if you are unable to participate in the walk, want to learn more about the walk, or want to make a donation, probably the best way to do it.
Yeah, and they have, you can find a walk in your area by zip code, and you can search on there. I know we've had people on, Dana Thompson, I think she
Dana Thompson is the...
And I hear a rumor she'll actually bake you cookies if you...
I've been seeing this,
yes,
so...
Yeah. We may have to throw her some cat. No, I'm kidding. Some of the facts that we looked up said more than 5 million people are living with Alzheimer's.
And didn't you say that that's just in the United States?
Yes.
That's an incredible number. Yeah.
And it said by 2050, this number could be as high as 16 million. Wow.
That's stunning. The scope of those affected by Alzheimer's is a lot wider than I realized.
Oh, and I think the fact about just the U.S. was that every 66 seconds, someone in the U.S. develops or is diagnosed with the disease. Every 66 seconds. That's amazing.
It is amazing.
Oh, 1 in 3 seniors will die with Alzheimer's or dementia. And since 2000, deaths from heart disease have decreased by 14%, which is great.
It is great.
But deaths from Alzheimer's have increased by 89%. That's
pretty stunning.
That's incredible.
But I wonder if maybe that's related to the fact that we have a big population, you know, an aging population that's quite huge right now as far as the demographic goes. So, and it does tend to affect people who are older, older than, say, 50 or... You know.
And I do think medicine is a lot better. I think when my grandmother was aging, she was 90s, and she probably had, looking back now, I think she may have had it,
right.
But was never diagnosed with it. So, so I feel like we're more aware.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, the money goes to research, and that's definitely needed so that they can find out more about potential causes and cures and how to educate people better and that's a lot of what the Caregiver University is doing as well, is teaching people how to give care to those with Alzheimer's, to friends or loved ones, and how to make that transition. And Alzheimer's definitely seems to be a very transitional. Right. You have phases that are, you know, as it progresses, it tends to get worse, and more education and different education is needed due to the nature of that disease. So.
And two, something that I had learned as a caregiver was that it changes with each person, with each day, with each time. What worked today may not work tomorrow.
Right. So kind of probably a lot to look at as a caregiver. Like,
absolutely.
I'm not sure what I did yesterday isn't working today.
Right.
So I know they provide a lot of resources.
Yeah. And there's also a number on the alz.org. I didn't write that down, but there's a number. I believe it's a hotline you can call if you're in a crisis situation and you just don't know what to do. You can call and get some help from them. So if you're interested in the Alzheimer's Walk, give Kyle a call. Again, his number is 317-587-2238. And I got this off the website. So yeah, if you have any questions, give Kyle a call and join a team in a walk today.
Thanks for the information.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for joining us on Everyday People.
Tune in next week for more information and resources that connect everyday people to everyday resources. For WFHB, I'm Courtney Stewart.
And I'm Stacey Goffinet.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Alex Davis and Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Everyday People is produced by Courtney Stewart and Stacey Goffinet. Our engineer is Megan Waite. Our theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer, Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Dan Withard. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
And you can be part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
And stay tuned for Interchange, Bloomington Community Radio's longest-running public affairs program, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local